Brennan Mejia, and I play Tyler, the Red Dino Charge Ranger, and you're listening to the Lightning Collective podcast hosted by Callum. It's about to get wild!
Hello and welcome to the Lightning Collective podcast. I'm your host, Callum, and today I've got a very special guest. I've been on hiatus for a while. It's been no secret, I don't think. I've been quite honest with it. Just in terms of my job, I edit a lot, and you know, I don't want to go home and edit again. I shot my shot. I don't know if that's even a phrase, but I threw out a request. Person on the other end said yes, so he's here with me today. Even if you're not a huge fan of this medium, but obviously you're here, you're a Power Rangers fan, you have definitely seen his art everywhere. It's used constantly. It's amazing. His name is Goni Montez. How are you doing?
Pretty well, pretty well. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Right. So I'll just get straight into the questions because I'm extremely excited. I remember in 2016, I was at college. It was sort of the middle of my second year, I think. And where my college was based was in the center of... So I come from Brighton in the UK, and it's known for the lanes, which is basically just like a series of roads that are filled with shops. And they're in sort of like a, I don't know, like a grid pattern, I suppose, just filled with shops. And my college was in the center of that. And there was a comic book shop there. And the comic book shop was basically our playground. We'd probably go there once or twice a week just to have a look. I wasn't very liquid at the time, so I couldn't sadly get pull lists and stuff, but I corrected myself at uni. I went to the local comic book shop there and opened the pull list. But back in Brighton, I remember walking into the comic book shop in 2016 and seeing five of your amazing covers, because the book had just been released. It was issue number zero, which to this day, I'm still confused why it was an issue zero. Pretty important to the whole story, because it wasn't a prequel. It was... If I remember correctly, it was a part of the first story arc. So it surprisingly it was an issue zero, but there was how many covers for that? There was seven covers initially. There was green, black, yellow, blue, pink, green, which was I think probably 1 in 50, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and then there was white that was 1 in 100. Oh, you also did an eighth cover.
I think there were the reprints.
there was the reprint with Rita and Green's helmet, but then there was also the two, I think, Comic Con exclusive covers, if I'm not mistaken. There was Armored Red and Armored Black being easier to get than red. Yeah, and it just, I read the first issue because I got that one, and then I put it to bed until I got to uni, and then I went back on my brother's stag do. So I was reading them on a tablet at the time, and I went back and reread all the issues that were out at the time. And I mean, if your covers weren't on those shelves being so exciting and fresh, I mean, it was a simple concept with the helmets and just someone holding them, or, you know, the Rangers holding them, but it was just the way they looked. Like, it reminded me of like Alex Ross. Like, it was sort of hyper realistic. We'll get on to Power Rangers in a second, though. I just want to talk about how you started initially. Tell me about young Goni. Did you always want to be an illustrator, or did you have your eyes set on a different profession? You sort of slipped into sketching and illustrating because it was something you sort of did in your spare time and people noticed, and then you're like, oh, maybe I could, you know, do that as a career. Or were you always set on being an illustrator?
I don't think I was always set on it. I think it was something that I was always meant to be, and I completely ignored it most of my childhood. It was kind of strange, because I think it's just, you know, having older parents, they were just more focused on studying something that had to do with like science or math or whatever. Mainly because like they want you to be successful, and that's kind of what they think success looks like. I guess for the generation, that was success. So art was not a thing that was heavily encouraged, but it's something that I was always doing. Like, I was a little kid, I was just always drawing. When I was in school, it was easier for me to like remember. This is kind of a weird situation. it was easier for me to remember the material that was being taught to me if I was, instead of actually writing down the content that was being taught to me, I would actually be drawing, and the drawings would remind me to the events where like the content was being taught to me. So it's almost like writing it down in an entirely different but very personal language. I had some trouble at school. Like when I was in elementary school, I have a bit of a learning disability. I'm in the spectrum. And then I wasn't a great student in elementary school, like very early elementary school, which is weird. Cause that's the time where everyone's like, okay. And then around, I want to say fourth grade or something like that. One of my teachers noticed that I did better in tests if she would just let me draw instead of stop me. So that she kind of broke through. And ever since that point in my life, I just kept drawing in my notebooks when I was just in class. So it was just something that was very natural to me. And it never stopped. But I never truly considered art as a career until I was in college. I went to college for an entirely different thing. It was microbiotech or something like that. And it was just dull and I didn't like it. And I was okay at it. I would say I was kind of on the mediocre side. I never paid attention. I never put any effort. I was passing my classes, but it's not like I was getting A's. I was getting B's and stuff like that. Honestly, it was just boring. I was bored by it. And then when it came time to find a job, I realized that it's oh my God, this is what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. I chose wrong. I hate this. This is terrible. So I made a switch. And I got a degree instead in art, but since I got my other background, my first job was a scientific illustrator because I had all that knowledge in science, so I got to put it to some use, which was nice. And it got me my first job, so that was nice. But yeah, I guess I was always meant to be this. I just didn't realize it until it was very late, which is story of my life, realizing things very late.
That's so interesting about the notes. So you did that from when you were very young. Did you do that all the way through school?
College.
Oh, wow, really? Yeah. So what was
Once I started, I never stopped.
So was it all sketches of notes, or was there a mix of actual worded notes and then sketches that you would then assign to those notes? Or was it just all sketches?
It became a combination, elementary, middle school, and high school. It was mostly sketches. I do remember my mom at some point being a little concerned because she would check my notebooks and she would notice that there was barely any content in there, but there was a lot of drawings. And she was like, wait, why is he passing school with such high marks and then doesn't have anything in the notebooks? What's going on here? So she had a meeting with a teacher at some point. It's that fourth grade teacher. And the fourth grade teacher told her that. It's I noticed that if I just let him draw, he's going to ace every test. And look at me, I have his desk here. I can show you what he has. It's he's acing things, but he just does this. And it goes hand in hand. It's I think visually. I don't think in words normally, which is if I'm going to talk, I have to sort of warm it up. Which honestly, for this podcast, my best friend is literally just sitting behind me right now. And we've been talking all morning, which is okay, this is going to help. Because if I had just been painting quietly all day, this would not be the same podcast right now. It would be an entirely different sphere.
Wow, okay, all right.
Yeah, so thank you, Parker. anyway, long story short, I think visually, I don't think in words. So for some reason, every time I was asked a question and at the time, I was this little kid. So I was just essentially copying whatever I saw when I was drawing stuff. So it was I would be in a test and I would be asked a question in that test. And I'm oh yeah, I'm Michelangelo from Ninja Turtle. I remember that. And then I would just answer the question correctly. But what I remembered was Michelangelo from the Ninja Turtle was the mnemonic to remember the concept, which is kind of silly because to this day, that stuff still it stuck.
Wow, that's so interesting to me. When you were doing a test and it's all worded, so would you have a separate notepad that you would be sketching on, and then
I would do it in the same test.
Really?
Wow. I'll do it in the same test. Okay. Some teachers actually got upset. And thankfully, because my mom noticed that it was working, she would actually defend me. So if a teacher actually
Wow.
complained about that, my mom would be like, eh, don't listen to them. Okay. It's just paper. You answer
Wow,
the question,
okay.
right?
And you said you're on the spectrum. Is that diagnosed or is that sort of you know the signs, so you know you're
Oh no,
somewhere?
I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed. I was diagnosed late because I'm 41 years old. So when I was a little boy, there wasn't as much knowledge as there is now. So I was diagnosed when I was in college because I was having some pretty nasty troubles with like panic attacks and getting overwhelmed very easily and like just generally sensory issues and stuff like that. So I started going to therapy for that to figure out what's going on. Also, I had terrible people skills because I didn't know how to read social cues very well. So when I was in therapy, like they diagnosed me and they helped me with that. So it took many years. At first, I didn't want to accept it. I was like very upset about it. But then I noticed that the therapy started helping, and I'm like, well, what's the problem with this? It's not a problem anymore. So yeah, I'm very pro therapy. I've done it for like many years now. Still do it regularly, and it's helped me a lot.
Wow,
But yeah,
okay.
it's fully diagnosed being in the spectrum. It's really funny because my mom didn't know, and then I remember keeping that information from her because like when I was diagnosed, I was 18 or 19 or something like that. And at first, since I didn't want to accept it, I never told anybody for well over a decade. And eventually, I just decided it's like maybe it's time to start telling people. So when I told my friends, and they were like, I love that some of my friends were, it's like, oh yeah, I kind of knew. And it's like, okay, whatever. But then there were a few friends like, oh, that's funny. I am too. I'm diagnosed. And I'm like, wait, we've been friends for like 2 decades and we never knew we were both in the spectrum. That's like, we didn't know that about each other. But the best story was when I told my mom, because I thought my mom was going to be like, oh, whatever. But when I told her, her response was literally like, oh my God, that explains a lot. It's like,
Right.
oh God, I put this poor woman through hell when I was a
Wow, okay,
kid.
yeah.
She didn't know.
When you were diagnosed, did that help you with what you were doing at the time? Because if you were 18 or 19, you would have been at university or college, right?
Yeah, I was in college.
Did
Yeah.
that help you figure out what you were doing at college, or did you feel like it was a hindrance at the time because like you said, you weren't really accepting it at the time, or did it
Yeah.
help you?
It didn't help me at the time because I didn't take it well at first. I felt very like hindered by it, and I just set off to like prove this diagnosis wrong. I was like, no, absolutely that's not me. I'm not on the spectrum. No, absolutely not. That part though helped with my social skills because that part made me more attentive to social cues. Because essentially, since I set out to like prove this diagnosis wrong, and that was
Yeah.
one of the biggest things at the time that people used to talk about, that like, oh, autistic people don't really read social cues well, which is not necessarily true, not for everybody. But I set out to like prove it wrong, and one of the things that I was like, I essentially educated myself on was like properly reading social cues. So definitely, the one thing that it helped me with was building stronger friendships. And now that group of friends that I made during that time, very present in my life. We essentially spent Thanksgiving together every, it's, I'm not sure if you guys celebrate Thanksgiving over there. We do it over here.
We
But
do
yeah,
not know.
no, okay, yeah, it's a, no, I figured that's an American thing. Well, and you probably know the story behind it. So I just realized what the Pandora's box I just opened here. But yeah, we celebrate Thanksgiving together, which I think people now call it Friendsgiving. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. We were pioneers. But we still do that together. We still see each other. Some of us live in clusters in like the same town. So it's kind of cool. Many of them still live. I live in Atlanta. Many of them actually live in Atlanta still too with me.
Wow,
So
okay, nice.
that's yeah, we get to see each other very, very often, which is awesome. But yeah, I think that's kind of the part that it really helped me with was just strengthening my friendships and being a better person towards like the people that I care for and love.
Mean, it's great that I think in today's world, people on the spectrum are finally people are taking them seriously. It's happening.
I think it has a lot to do with like the expectation that neurodivergent people need to adapt to, you know, a neurotypical methodology, which is kind of like a lot to expect from a person that already has like sensory issues and other issues. And honestly, I'm glad. I think the lucky part about me, or like the luck that I had, was the fact that my mom is one of those people that she was born to be a mom. Like, there's not a lot of people. There are people out there that it's like, you know, they're just naturally maternal. Mom is one of those. My mom just decided, like, very early in age, that like she wanted to be a teacher. She wanted to be a mom, and those two things combined helped me a lot, because she understood like pedagogy and other, I'm not sure if I pronounced that right word right, but she understood teaching very, very well, and she understood how to like reach the kids. And essentially, without having any research or knowledge about autism, she instinctively did everything right. Everything that therapists would recommend parents do now, she did that just instinctively and naturally. And one of those things was her just picking her fight and understanding that it was like, okay, he's a little bit weird about this, but that's not going to be the hill I die on. Like, this is, I'm just going to let that part be. Like, and also understand that it's like, okay, this one's one that's not going to be easy to deal with. So, like, I have to help him get better with this particular thing. And she was also very respectful of like the way, or like not even just respectful, but like curious and like celebrating of like things that are now I know are like my neurodivergences. She's just into that stuff. She's a very proud person. Like, just, she is very proud of her kids, including me and all that stuff. So I don't know. I think it helped me a lot. And I'm very lucky, and I'm very happy. I'm very grateful to her for that.
That's amazing.
It's like, without, also she is particularly good at languages. She's very, very good. So like the speech issues that I had, those were the battles that she was like, nope, I'm not surrendering this one. You are going to learn how to speak properly. So she kept at it. So, you know, it's, she used also like her strengths to like help me out, which was really cool.
Sounds like you have got an amazing mum.
Oh, she can fuck. She's awesome.
Yeah. You
don't get her pissed off, though. She's still a Latin woman. Jesus Christ. Oh, boy. She's also an archer, too, like Kimberly.
Oh, is she? Oh, no.
She was when she was young, so she has excellent aim. And Hispanic mom with excellent aim, just Google that. Not a good combination. Not a good combination.
So if you annoyed her over the other side of the room, she could launch a piece of bread at your head. And
or her high heels. Yes.
Oh, high heels. Yes. Yeah,
like,
of course.
Grab a high heel and it just like flew like a boomerang. Always landed on like full side, single day, every time.
You obtained a BA from UPR. I'm going to butcher this. Is it Mayagüez or Mayagüez?
Mayagüez, yeah, perfect. Oh,
amazing.
That's
cool.
A difficult word, dude. That's awesome.
The only reason why I know how to pronounce that was because of Wimbledon with Alcaraz, because I was pronouncing it Alcaraz. And then I heard the commentator who have the pronunciation sheets say Alcaraz. I was like, oh, okay, so the Z is pronounced as a th. So yeah, cool, glad I got that right first time. And in 2003, like you said, oh no, sorry, you got an MFA as well, from SCAD Atlanta, or is it SCAD Atlanta?
Yeah, they call it SCAD. Yeah.
Oh, SCAD. Okay, cool.
I got my first degree from University of Puerto Rico. And that's around the same time that I got that job as a scientific illustrator. And that was a really cool job. I also, I guess I just wanted to follow in like my mom's footsteps, and I wanted the ability to teach, which I've actually had the chance to. We'll get that in a second. But I wanted to get my master's degree because the only way to teach university is to have a terminal degree, at least in the United States. So the master's degree in illustration is the terminal degree. There's no doctorate over it. So like it is a terminal degree. So I wanted to get that master's degree so I was able to teach. But it also expanded what I can do as an artist. So that's when I was doing that master's, that's when I actually ended up switching from strictly scientific illustration to a whole bunch of other stuff.
So with the illustrations going from, I would imagine, very real world based illustrations, you then went to fictional book illustrations and comics. How did you adapt your style at that point in your life to fit those mediums?
Actually, it's really funny because the scientific illustration job was the adaptation. Because since I had been spending my whole life just like watching cartoons, reading comics, drawing, all I had was just like fictional imaginary stuff in my head. Sometimes it would be stuff like I'm just copying, or I'm just like, I'm going to draw like my own take on like Ninja Turtles or Power Rangers or like any kind of superheroes that I was into, like X-Men or whatnot, or like a lot of anime stuff too. But then when I was doing that job in Sea Grant, which was like the scientific illustration job, that's when I was actually adapting to it, to draw like more realistic, just so that I could be like more precise with my drawing, which taught me a lot. That was really cool because it enhanced my drawing skills. I had to be more observant, and drawing is a lot about observation. That was actually the adaptation. So when I went to grad school, it was more like tapping back into like my real set of skills, what I really like to do, which is, you know, more fictional stuff.
How did you get your first job in comics? Because I looked on your website and I don't think, unless I'm being blind, which is highly likely, I don't think it was actually mentioned. Like, what was your first big break, I suppose?
My first big break was Clive Barker's Next Testament. And Clive Barker is the creator of Hellraiser. Yeah, Clive Barker is the creator of Hellraiser and other like IPs as well. But I feel Hellraiser is probably like his most famous.
Right.
So, he made this comic book called Next Testament, which is a very interesting interpretation on the second coming of, it's not even Christian. It's an interpretation of of the second coming of the Son of God to say something close to it. Anyway, it was a really, of course, he leans towards horror, but the thing with this comic is that the God was like stunningly beautiful. It was just like colors and like it was just beauty, but with blood at the same time. There was like horror too.
Yeah.
And I loved working in it because of that, because I've never been drawn much to horror before that, until I started sort of seeing that horror can be sort of go hand in hand with other styles as well. Like, it doesn't have to be like a slasher film or something like that. It can be more psychological. It can be brainier. It can include like elements of like beauty and stuff like that. So I got to draw this god over and over again, doing all kinds of like really crazy violent stuff, but in like absolutely beautiful ways and methods. It was a really fun project. The way that I got that was I had just been doing a lot of editorial work, which is super fun. I love doing editorial work. The only thing with editorial work is that editorial work is, those magazines have like really quick turnaround. So sometimes they call you with like 2 week deadlines, sometimes 1 week deadline. I think the shortest deadline I literally got was like, hey, this is due tomorrow.
Wow, okay.
And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm not gonna sleep. And I did that in my 20s, but I can't do that anymore. That whole situation where I was like, fine, I won't sleep all night, and now I'll just like make some art. I can't do that anymore. I'm in my 40s now, which is not the same. Yeah, that was my, the art director that contacted me, which was Chris Rosa, worked at Boom Studio. And Next Testament was from Boom Studio. So I've sustained, it's actually been 10 years now, because they contacted me in 2012, 2013. So we've been collaborating for about 10 years now.
So you were a scientific illustrator for nearly a decade. Is that right?
I did scientific illustration for, I want to say, four years, actually.
Okay.
To be precise. It was from 2003 to 2006. So, yeah, three, then, four, five, and six.
And then were doing editorial work for the next remaining years until New Testament.
Honestly, I was freelancing, which is to say I was doing editorial work, I was doing advertising work. Actually, when Next Testament arrived, I was in the middle of a project for Intel, doing like an advertising campaign for them.
Wow, okay.
So doing some stuff for them. And it was really good. Like, but the thing with advertising is that when an advertising project comes in, you pretty much have to like close shop for everything else. They pay really well. You can justify closing the shop for other stuff. But if you have other projects, it's difficult to time. Because if I have, like, for example, I'm always painting a helmet cover these days. So if I get an advertising job, I have to actually like call my editors in Boom and tell them like, hey, can we reschedule some stuff? Cause like, I need to fit this project in. And Boom told me a long time ago, it's like, we want to keep you so busy that like, you don't have to be exclusive, but like, we want to have you in our, like under the name Boom Studios more often than any other house. And I'm like, okay, sounds cool. Like, if I'm working, I'm happy. That doesn't matter to me. So I've worked with DC and other folks too, but Boom Studios is the one that like, definitely keeps me the business.
So you were freelancing and then you did the New Testament and that was at Boom. So how did you, because you said in your bio on your website that you can get bored easily, so you like to switch up your style frequently, and I think fans of Power Rangers do see that in the covers. How often would you be switching up your styles, or is it like per project you'd be like, right, okay, this requires this, whereas this last project required this sort of thing? Because I know as well you're not really a fan of inspiration, you just like to get your head down and, you know, get on with it, and then it sort of comes to you naturally. Is that the case as well with you switching up your styles?
That's definitely, okay, first thing I want to address something. When I said I get bored, I was like 100% being humorous there. Because like when I wrote that bio, I was may have been a little tipsy. and I wrote some crazy stuff in there. Anyway, but no, I don't, I actually have to admit, maybe it's like a feature from the autism. I don't experience boredom. I am never bored. I do get, like, I do feel stagnant, like, now in all seriousness. If I am not doing something, if I'm doing the exact same thing over and over and over and over, I'm going to start feeling a little bit stagnant. So I start experimenting a lot with styles and different painting methods and different brushwork, different colors, compositions, and stuff like that, just to, like, feel like I'm, like, there's still something to improve. And I feel like that's even... it's even shown up on the, actually you can see it very clearly on the helmet covers, which I will say, fans, I'm really sorry if you don't like the changes that I've done or like the new experiments that I've actually gone through with those covers. I really hope they like them, because I really like where they've been headed, because they started out very like line work, flatter color, some glares here and there, and like I've just kept getting even more painterly with them and like shinier and whatnot. And it's just because the project kind of asks for it. And also, as you keep going, you grow, you keep getting better. And I feel like the way that I'm solving those problems now, especially when it comes to the helmet, is more efficient and looks better than they did before. But this is not to like say that the first set look bad. I'm super freaking proud of that first set. But
they are iconic. Like... The helmet covers are iconic. Like there's loads of people. I don't know how you feel about people mimicking you. I'm not going to say copy because people aren't trying to redo what you've already done, but because they're so, well, like I said, iconic, people on like Instagram and like other illustrators or graphic designers try and mimic your style to do like the other helmets of other teams. I don't know if you take that as a compliment or, you know.
I will go on the record here and say, yes, I do. I love that. That's really cool. Like, it makes me feel like I'm part of the fandom, which is incredibly important to me. It also makes me feel like I've become part of culture. Like, I grew up, and like my first drawings, I started doing this a lot in like second and third grade. I was just drawing Ninja Turtles. Like, that's the thing that I used to draw a lot when I was a little kid. And I was just, mimicking what I was seeing. And that did, like, well, it's sort of like the foundation of where I am now. So, to be honest, when I see other people doing that, and I've actually, like, ever since I started the Instagram, like, a couple weeks ago, I've gotten a couple of people actually send me their version of, like, or the inspirations that they got out of those covers and, like, what they've done with it. And it's just really fun to see. Like, I love it. So I'm incredibly flattered. Makes me feel seen. Makes me feel good. And it also makes me feel part of, like, a large group of, like, huge fandom that's so cool. Because Power Rangers fans are really cool. They really are.
We really are. I'm sure that you don't want to pick a favorite, but if you had to pick a favorite of someone sending you their version of a helmet, do you have one, or like a ranger that you saw someone send you and you were like, wow, that's incredible? Do you have one? Or
okay, I kind of do, but it isn't necessarily like painted. A father dressed up his kid as Lord Draken, and the kid, like, he must have been like 8, 9 at most, and the kid was like essentially posing with the helmet and everything, like in the cover and stuff like that. And it was like a really cool like photo of that. And I'm like, oh my God, that warmed my heart so much.
Amazing.
That definitely did my day. Like, I even told him, it was like, it was the dad who sent me that. And I'm like, oh, this is so freaking cool, man. This made my day.
That's amazing. Like, cause I run a toy photography Instagram page. There's also a lot of toy photography that sort of mimic your helmet covers as well.
I love those. I've seen them and they're so cool.
Yeah, like it's definitely special. I think what you've done, like, it's such a, did you come up with the idea for those, or did Boom tell you, oh, we'd like to, for this issue number 0, we'd like to have the Rangers holding their helmets? Was that the case, or was it you like, oh, I've got an idea for the set of covers, this is the idea? How did that go down?
It was definitely a collaboration. So when I got the email, it was from Alex Gaylor and Daphna Flea. Alex Gaylor, at the moment, I think he works now at DC, and Daphna has become like a huge, like, superstar editor at Boom Studios. Like, the amount of the amount of like IPs that she works with is like absurd. And the fact that she has the brain to like keep memory of all those details is just insane. But she's amazing to work with. And right now, the one that's serving, like, at the time it was Daphna Pleben and Alice Gaylor. Right now is Daphna Pleben and Allison. Allison is sort of like the one serving as the art director. The whole situation though is that there's like a lot of different Ranger comics at the moment, so like I do helmets for several comics, but yeah, it was a conversation between Alex Gaylor, Daphna, and myself that we were sort of coming up with that idea, and then it was sort of like, okay, we're just gonna do them holding their helmet, like we're just gonna like just, you know, as if they're about to put it on. And then eventually it became a matter of like, okay, but let's just like focus entirely on the helmet. So it's a crop where you don't get to see the head or anything like that. Or like, you just pretty much get to see the helmet. The most important part is like the helmet and the morpher, like the belt buckle. And then from then on, we actually started tampering with some compositions to make it look very like, this is you're going to get like a lot of inside scoops here. To make it look very flat and very Japanese print. This was very strange at the time. The whole process was an evolution. And then there were going to be some elements added to it. So it's sort of like correlating each ranger to like an element. So like, you know, having the red ranger with some fire and stuff like that. And like the black ranger was like with some ice, stuff like that. And then eventually when I started working on them, I did that at first, totally lost that Japanese print feel. and then I remember this like, oh my God, this one episode when Cammy is no longer the Green Ranger and Billy catches Zordon and Alpha working on the suit for the White Ranger. And I remember Billy going like, they're making new Rangers. But then when the White Ranger was revealed, all these glares and lights and stuff like that. And I'm like, that's it. Let's make all the Rangers look like that. That'd be really cool. And it also goes with like what Daphna always said, like, we're not going to make the Rangers as like the production that was done at that time. We're going to make the Rangers that we felt we saw. That the cool Power Rangers that we know we saw. Because of course, like production values and stuff like that are different, and it depends on how much of a budget you have. Like right now, the Power Rangers look like the TV show looked amazing. But at that time, you could definitely see some like issues here and there with production because the budget wasn't the same. So we wanted to draw and paint the Rangers that we remembered. We also wanted to celebrate something because I'm not sure how many fans felt this way, but like there was a time where like liking this IP was sort of like the butt of a joke, which is like ridiculous. Like it's something like, why can't we just like things that we love, that we feel like are part of us? This was sort of like a coming out. And it's like, we're going to like come in with like a full celebratory, like, we love the Power Rangers. They're freaking cool. They're awesome. And this is our interpretation of it. And that's how we ended up with those, like, with those covers. And eventually we decided to do like the reflections of the Zords in like their screens or like their visors. And that was like the last edit. And that was that. That's how we ended up with those covers. It was sort of like a collaboration of like trying to like let's paint these Rangers the way that we remember them.
You definitely turned heads with those covers, because I remember, yeah, when I walked into the comic book shop, even the comic book sellers, what am I saying, the shop assistants were, yeah, like they were praising it. They were like, oh wow, like look at these covers, why does Power Rangers look this good?
I mean, so much. That like... means so freaking much. You have no idea. Because especially like, I still had that whole that memory of like people making fun of me because of the things that I liked, Power Rangers included. Like I liked anime. I liked Power Rangers. I liked a lot of different types of cartoons and stuff like that. I liked a bunch of different kinds of comics. And like, and as a person in like, at that time I was like entering my 30s. I remember feeling that it's like, well, people expect you to like go into adulthood and just like literally ditch all the stuff that you used to like as a child. That's not me. That's not who I want to be. And I want to be a part of this. And I want this to be a part of me for the rest of my life. So when those covers came out, there was a part of me that was like hoping that this is well received. But there's also the part of me of like, yeah, well, if it's not, I don't give a crap, because I love this. I love the Rangers. I love doing this kind of work. Child version of me is totally high-fiving me right now. Like, if go back to when I was like 12 years old and tell him like, yeah, in the future you're going to be doing like the Power Ranger comic covers, like that kid would have fainted.
After the initial run of the helmets, which like I said were, I think, 8 of them, or wait, hold on, 9 of them? Because did you do Armored Black with the rest of the covers, with the initial 8, or did that come later? Yeah. I can't remember.
Oh, I can tell you. It was originally with the first pick.
Okay.
All the way up to green. Then, because demand actually exceeded the numbers that we expected by a lot, then we were like, okay, we're going to do one even more. So this is before they even got printed. Like, it was like literally the comic shops asking for more. They were like, okay, I feel like we should give them something even further because they've asked for so many that I feel like we should commend them for their, so like sort of throw in there something as like a thank you. So that's how the White Ranger became a part of it. And it was kind of like, okay, let's do the seventh one because like there are some shops that have ordered so many that I feel like we should essentially say thank you with something. So then we made an even rarer version in the White Ranger. So that's like the first seven. So then red and black were exclusives for two different conventions. I think it was New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con. I think red was San Diego Comic Con and black was New York Comic Con. And then there was the first reprint, which was Rita with the green helmet. And then there was the second reprint. No, actually, the second reprint, it's, I don't remember the numbers. The first, okay, the reprint is Rita. And then there's an even another reprint, which is Tommy with the Dark Sword.
Yes.
So in total, it's 11? 11, yeah.
And how long did it take you? Because I'm just looking at red now, and the first seven, or well, nine, really. Sorry, wait. I'm getting my numbers mixed up. Yeah, nine. They're all very, well, they're the same aesthetic. How long did it take you just to do the one? And like nail those details, because that red helmet looks exactly like the show. Like there's not a detail on it that is wrong.
That's one thing
it's insane.
That's one thing that we always had in mind, that it's like, listen, the fandom is knowledgeable. They're also adults now. They're no longer kids because they're the same people as us. So like we want to make sure that the details are there and that we stick to it because there's a level of respect that we need to pay to this. And like Boom Studios coming in and acquiring the license, that was their take at all times. It was like, we're not here to turn this into like our version of it. We need to pay respect to like what it already is. So the details were very important. And like, there was a lot of back and forth on that Red Ranger, the very first one. There is a second, actually, the one that got printed, the one that everyone got to see, is literally the second one, because I actually did a full red cover, and it was like, nope, the details aren't exactly in like where they need to be, and we literally restarted.
Wow. Okay.
So there is a file in my computer that nobody will ever see.
Wow.
Literally. The Red Ranger done wrong. And it was a learning experience.
Wow, okay. How long did it take you to do just one cover?
The first one took about 3 days.
Wow.
And then the second one, which is like the one that's the true one, the real one, that took about 3 more days. Yeah, about 3 more days. Blimey. And then after that, I kind of sort of started working one by one, little by little. And it was like one do every week. And then by the time that White Ranger came in, that I already started doing some changes there. Like I actually started like using less hard lines so that the brushwork on the light was a little like, I wouldn't say fuzzier, but like just a little softer so that it the glare is stronger.
You can definitely tell with the most recent covers with the Omegas that they're very similar, but they're just slightly different. And I think it completely works because it's a completely different era. Just like how the first season of the show is obviously all Japanese footage, and then second season of the show is all American footage. So the aesthetics are just slightly different. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. I think they still work together. Like right now on Google, I'm just flicking through Google Images, and I haven't gone to this story yet, so forgive me for his name, but the Lord Zed Ranger, whatever his name is at the minute, his cover is directly above the initial red. Yeah, the aesthetics are different, but you can clearly tell that they are a part of a set still, which is nice.
Yeah.
Well, very nice.
As the aesthetics of the helmet change, I was obligated to adapt the style a little bit, because the first helmet they have a lot of like edges here and there that allow for a sharper white with like just sheer lines. Whereas the newer helmets have a sleeker, so not sleek, that's not the word. They're more round, to be honest. That's pretty much it. They have less edges. So because them having less edges, I have to be a little bit more like, I have to be softer with the light. Because if I start going very edgy, it'll start suggesting edges on the actual helmet, and then the details are going to be lost. The helmet is going to look odd. And it's going to look like it doesn't belong. And honestly, like, you have no idea how much we nitpick, how much back and forth we go on, like, the helmets and the morphers. Those are the things that we go back and forth the most. And, like, yeah, when I send sketches and stuff like that, we've worked so much now. Like, we've worked together so long that we can move really fast. And they know exactly, like, what I'm expecting as feedback. And how much feedback I'm expecting, especially a lot. I'm like, just when I send you sketches, like, just be brutal, crucify this thing, so that when we move forward, I know I'm going the right direction. So the helmet, usually I don't get a lot of feedback, because I tend to put a lot of attention. The morphers, though, like, especially for each generation, those can be tricky, and I do get a lot of feedback from them, and oftentimes I ask it. Because the morphers can be strange. A lot of them are toys, like, there's discrepancies depending on, like, whether you see it in Japan or whether you see it in America and stuff like that. So we need to make sure that, like, we are sticking to, like, the actual, like, American version, because those are the Rangers that we're painting.
So were you using the Bandai Legacy more for the one that was chrome as a template almost?
Yeah. And the same thing happened with the Zords. When I painted the Megazord and, like, the other swords, we were using the original ones, the ones that were on the show. But yeah, this was also really cool, because at the time it was Alex Gaylor, who is an encyclopedia of Power Rangers, to be honest. Like, if you ever want to get someone in your podcast that has, like, all the knowledge of Power Rangers ever, it's Alex Gaylor. He might be difficult to, like, pin down, because he works for DC now, and he's, like, really busy. But, like, that guy, like, just knows every little detail. And not to say that Daphna doesn't, because Daphna has also become another living encyclopedia of the Rangers. But yeah, Alex would essentially, like, we would run this stuff through Alex, just to make sure that everything was, like, in the right place. And I remember, like, us sending each other clips of episodes, or even sometimes full episodes, just to, like, oh, hey, compare it here. And conversations about, like, oh, there's a discrepancy in this episode. Because, of course, you know, production stuff. It's like, oh, okay, all right. Well, are we going to use this from this episode, or are we going to use it from this other episode? It's like, well, it was more prominent, like, in this episode, so let's stick to that one. It's like, okay, no problem. Let's do that one instead. So it's a lot of back and forth.
Talking
and also, like, so much fun.
Talking of the Zord covers, actually, that was going to be my next question. Because the show was shot in standard definition and details are very, very, very soft, how did you guys decide, without looking at the toys and just solely focusing on the show, how did you, was there, like, behind the scenes photos that you were looking at that were clearer, or was it just purely the show you were looking at in its final finish?
It was purely the show. Okay. And I'll be honest with you, it goes hand in hand with, like, we're not going to draw the Rangers we saw. We're going to draw the Rangers we remember. We may have seen low definition imagery, but in your memory, it's burnt as high definition.
Yeah.
Those Zords were sleek, like new cars, shiny, edgy, all that stuff. That's what's burnt in my brain. So So when I was going to draw them, I was going to draw them that way.
With the Zord covers as well, there was the Megazord cover. And then you did two... Did you do two monster covers as well? I remember seeing two or three gold foil covers. One of them...
No, I've actually... I think the only ones that I've done have been... Any of the enemies I've done has been... Or antagonists have been Rita and Zed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've never done any of the other ones. Yeah.
I, funnily enough, actually, I think a couple of weeks ago, I, off of Amazon, weirdly, I got a t-shirt with your T-Rex Zord cover on it with Japanese lettering on it. And I Google translated it when it got here, and it actually says Red Ranger, which is quite cool. But yeah, like,
cool.
It's such a cool, because looking at it, if you looked at that, you'd know it was sci-fi. But I don't think people would quite realize, if they've moved on for Power Rangers from when they were like 7 or, you know, 8 or whatever, I don't think they'd quite get it that it was Power Rangers t-shirt. So like, you comfortably wear it out and about because it doesn't say Power Rangers on it anywhere. But like, it's so cool that Hasbro are making your covers like readily available and like all sorts of products. It was just really weird. I was just looking on Amazon and it just popped up. I was just like, oh, okay. It was sick. It's a shame they don't do the other Zords. They only do the T-Rex. But yeah, but after the Zord covers, you did the Morphin variants, which are beautiful. So if anyone hasn't seen them, I'll just quickly describe them. So they're the Rangers morphing in civilian form, and there's like morphing energy coming out of the morpher, which we spoke about with the morphers already. But with each Ranger, the design for the energy is slightly different, and the Zords, or the, not so much the Zords, but the dinosaurs and dragons and the Tiger Zord are all...
Yeah, they're motifs,
in. Motifs. How did you decide with those covers what sort of energy, minus the motifs, what sort of energy you were going to attach to which Ranger?
That's actually, it goes back to the original helmet cover, because the original helmet covers had elements attached to them. Instead of the white background with like the lights and stuff like that, it was actually going to be the elements. And we were sort of going by the show, by the characters, sort of like energy and feel to it and stuff like that, and how, what they represented, their fighting styles as well. We actually examined a lot of their fighting styles. So, and that's kind of how we ended up giving them like those elements. And it also had a lot to do with the way that their Zords come out. Because like the T-Rex comes out of a volcano where there's like a bunch of fire and stuff like that. And the pterodactyl also does, but she comes out flying. So like we immediately, it's like, okay, let's just like do air, wind and stuff like that. The Black Ranger, the Mastodon comes off of a mountain that's like covered in ice, and there's like a lot of mist and stuff like that. So that's why we went with the ice. The Blue Ranger, we ended up giving the sand look because this was actually so freaking cool. When the Triceratops was coming in, it was crossing a desert. So it was, and it would actually get like, it would do this mirage thing, and it just looks so freaking cool, like driving forward with like the sun in the back and like this mirage happening. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. With Trini, hers came out of the forest, but we went more for like the fighting style. Trini was very like quick and like very electric, so we just decided to go like, oh, let's just get lightning there. And then for Tommy, and the first one we went with water because the Dragon Zord used to come out of water. And for the White Ranger, we went with sort of like a crystal energy thing, just light, reflecting light. You know, I think it goes a lot hand in hand with like the White Ranger thing. Drawing that tiger was really cool too in that comic, in that cover.
You guys thought of everything, because like, I didn't, apart from potentially red, I didn't actually associate the other morphs with, or maybe black actually as well. I didn't actually associate that they actually came from the show. So yeah, that's a sick detail with
it
Draken, because
was full inspiration from the show, 100% from the show.
With Draken, because he's not in the show, how did you decide his motif? Because it looks like an eye behind him. I know there's two sets of red eyes, but like it looks like a really dark eye, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How did you decide on that?
We wanted to do some sort of like a dark energy, like dragon thing, sort of coiling itself around him and like controlling him, possessing him, because like, you know, the soul of dragon. So we wanted to have that. And like, sort of like, as it coils itself around him, there's a depth behind it and it just goes into like a void, like a black. And that's where the eyes shine through. That's kind of like the idea that we came up with. The cool thing with those covers is that Boom Studios was giving me a lot of freedom on that, on like to making those choices. So long as I actually proved where they came from. So like those inspirations were like, it was me offering those, bringing them to the table, you know, and then it became sort of like a back and forth of like making sure that everything is like in line. And that everything makes sense with the lore.
You did a second pink cover for Power Rangers Pink. What was your thought process with that one? Because, you know, you could have easily just done, the pink cover all over again and have the same details, or, you know, boom, just re-release it. What was the thought process with changing it up for that specific book?
Is this for Dark Kim or for the pink offshoot?
Sorry, for the wait, is there a future Kim? I have not seen that. What?
There's a helmet of Dark Kim. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, not the helmet, the morphine cover.
Oh, yeah, that was really fun. Well, actually, we wanted to have like a full wraparound, and I don't know which one you're talking about. We wanted to have a full wraparound. So like, it's a whole piece that's like, it's, you know, twice the size of a comic cover, because it's like, it's more horizontal. No? Yeah, it's more horizontal. But we wanted to like go with a slightly different style to make sure that it didn't get like pinned with like the rest of the comics, with the actual like ongoing MMPR. So we wanted like a sort of a to separate it a little bit, but not too much, and to give Kim her own style. So for that one, my line work, instead of it being really sharp and stuff like that, I made it very flowy. Kind of like that wind element situation where it's like it just flows. The colors are more pastel, kind of like more in tune with the Pink Ranger. And I wanted to go like, instead of going really harsh, going softer. So that's what kind of dictated style in that cover.
It's a beautiful cover. It's a very beautiful cover.
Thank you.
And then you did these, I don't really know what to call them, but for Mighty Morphin and Power Rangers, when they split off into their own series, you did, I don't know, morphing grid variants. I don't know what you guys called them in the office, but essentially it incorporated a piece of everyone's suit design. If they had multiple suits, say for instance Jason, he's an Omega Ranger, he's also a Mighty Morphin,
yeah,
as well as a Zia Ranger. What did you guys call those variants, just so that I get the terminology right?
Actually, hold on. There is a word for it. I call them, I have it here as the Bolt covers. Not entirely sure if that's what they're called now, but like that was like the production name or something, like the working name.
Right.
So the Bolt covers. Yeah, and essentially they were more about the actual character and its like transitions and growth than they were about like a particular ranger or a particular color. We started with Tommy, of course, and then like we kept growing from there. And at that time, it was kind of like, well, we need to make it look very surreal, and very strange. So I'm like, okay, I can start getting very more impressionistic with the style. And that's kind of where what we ended up doing. We just started getting kind of just very impressionistic and just going wild. It was very, honestly, painting it was very like, go with my gut. And like in every single element, I'm like, yeah, this here, this there, blah, blah, blah. Just kept going back and forth and just trying weird things. It was the most go with the flow of all the covers. Like those covers are like pretty wild.
I love them. I think they're beautiful. Something about them speaks to me. I think it's the fact that there's not really any rhyme or reason to them. Like, for instance, with Jason, he's got the Zio Gold staff, I don't know, top in it. And then for Trini, there's no weapons at all, but you can clearly tell the MMPR and her Omega design is a part of it. And then with Aisha, again, the Sabretooth, but also her Ninjetti design as well. Was there with these designs, a bit like your helmet cover for Red, did you do one initially and then you scrapped one because you didn't really like the layout of it, or you know, you didn't think that you quite incorporated the right elements of that suit design?
No, they actually, it was, there's something very musical about them. It was very like just going with the flow and like so from the first one we just like, okay, this is it. And they were very kind to me about that. That was really nice because they were letting me experiment a lot. And I didn't know from the very beginning. It's like, is this going to fly or not? I wasn't sure. But no, they were very encouraging. And like as I kept going, they got even more and more encouraging. It was really fun to do those.
And with those covers, was it a case of, because they were incentive covers, was it a case of you did one at a time or did you do them all in bulk? And then...
No, it was, to be honest, every cover has been one at a time. Every single cover.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There, of course, there were plans for collection. Like the Morpher covers were like, okay, we're going to make a new collection. But it's always one at a time, which is sometimes challenging because the bold covers, the ones that we're talking about right now, I made so many of them that they evolved very swiftly. And like the first one to the last one, they're very, very different style. And it was just something that I just couldn't control. And I'm glad that they allowed me to lose control, to like not control it, because it would have been difficult to sort of stick to the same style that the first one had on the last one. It would have been very difficult. But the bold covers are numerous. I actually lost track of them at some point because I was just like doing them as they came along. But yeah, those are the ones that probably evolved the most or changed the most from beginning to end, because they were scattered and there were a lot of them. And also while I was doing those, I was also doing helmet covers too. So like I would do a helmet cover, a bold cover, then I would do probably some other projects that are not like Boom Studios or Power Rangers related. And then another bold cover would come in. And I would actually also start researching like how to draw the character, because we're actually doing the likenesses of the characters as best as we can. And as best as like the licenses allow us. So it gets tricky. It gets very tricky.
With these covers, you mentioned the likenesses to the actors. And I would imagine that was sort of easy to you compared to characters that haven't got faces. Like Matt, for instance, or Zordon, young Zordon. How did you do that? Did you have friends that you were like, hey, can I just take a photo of you and then, you know, I'll use you as inspiration? Or how did that work?
For Matt, I just drew inspiration from the comics and like his background and stuff like that. And I built the face myself. Like it was like literally out of just memory. So like I, Matt's face is just, that doesn't exist like in real life. I didn't take a picture of anything or anybody for that. Then for Zed, it's actually me.
Is it?
Yeah. So it is me, but very tampered with. So
wow. Much.
But it was, but I it was the only time I've done this, and I'm like, I was a little vain, and I'm like, hee hee hee, I'm gonna go ahead and insert myself here. So it was, it's a little vain, I admit, but yeah, that is like the face structure was actually mine.
Wow.
And then, okay. Yeah, and then for Zordon, it was somebody I knew at the time. Until okay. Story.
And then after those, what you call bold variants, there was the negative space variants for Power Rangers Universe. What was the what was the idea behind those, and how did you, I'm assuming you drew the Rangers like you normally would and sketch their whole bodies, helmets, everything, and then you'd go in afterwards and potentially sort of add a layer on top to remove the sketch lines, or you'd paint the bits that you wanted, layer the color in between, sandwich it in between the sketch and the color. Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
That's essentially that's a funny story. There was a moment during this time, Daphna was the one that I was working with the most on the Ranger stuff. This was before Allison stepped in. I'm still working with Daphna. It's just that Daphna is more in the editor side now. I was like working with Daphna, and I was like, hey, I wanted some action stuff. Like, I want to draw the Rangers fighting and doing some action stuff. She's like, oh, okay, so we have this like idea of like having the Rangers sort of like just showcasing their color the most. And we went through a couple of like back and forth on sketches. And then we, that's how we landed on like the just like the full color. And then just the, anything that's not that color is the thing that gets rendered. So if it's red, the red is just a solid color. And then everything else gets like really fully red. Save for their helmets. Their helmets needed rendering, of course. And that's kind of how we ended up with that idea. So it was mostly Daphna's idea and me just like, hey, I want to do this kind of stuff more. And then we developed it together from there.
Has it gotten to the point now where you can just go to whoever the editor is and just be like, hey, I want to do this. And they'll be like, sick. We'll put you in on these set, or you know, on this book or whatever, and you know, there'll be incentive covers. Has it gotten to that point now where you're just like, I've got an idea, and they're like, sick, we'll have it?
Yeah, actually they've come to me a couple of times and asked if you get any ideas that you want to just make and turn into a collection, please let us know.
Wow.
Yeah, there have been some stuff that started that way. Yeah. There was a time as well when I wasn't doing that many helmet covers because they thought that I was tired of doing the helmet cover, and we never had that conversation like at all. They just thought it's like, oh, Goni must be like tired of it by now. And it was kind of funny because eventually we just had the conversation and I'm like, what? No, I love drawing those stuff. Like, that's really fun. And then this was not long ago. This was just like a few months ago. And then, so now there's like another wave of helmet covers coming out, like, cause I'm actually working on them at the moment.
You can sort of tell within the fandom that sort of that was the case, because you did that initial set in 2016 to 2018, and then they start re-releasing your covers as the shiny foil ones. And then you can sort of tell like, oh, okay, we're done with the helmet variants. But yeah, there were still variations of Rangers coming out, and like people were picking up new powers, like Ranger Slayer in Dragon New Dawn has like a brand new suit. And then that came out eventually as one of your covers. So yeah, I mean, like, I'm glad that you eventually had that conversation, because otherwise we would have missed out on so many of these new suits. And like, oh, and you of course did the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles covers.
Oh, that was so
how
cool.
Could I forget those?
So many of them too. I think the grand total was over 20 something.
I remember when issue 1 came out of that series, and my comic shop in Chichester, which is where I went to uni, they put them all aside for me, bless them. And I was just, I said to them bluntly, I was like, guys, thank you. I'd love them, but I can't. Because the book was 6 issues long. Getting four at a time. And then you had the incentives as well, which I don't think they ended up getting. But I was just like, guys, you're gonna run me dry. I physically can't. I'd love to. I really would, but I can't.
Well, sorry, that wasn't the intention.
It's not your fault. Like, if I had the money, 100%. But like me as a student, you know what? Not for a student, I was pretty liquid, but not that liquid. So I would have loved those covers. How did you tackle that? And did you know with the story and how that evolved, in case anyone hasn't read them, I mean, I'm pretty sure it's common knowledge by now, but if they haven't read them, I'm not going to spoil it. But the way the story evolved, the Teenage Mutants were very involved with the Power Rangers. Did you know when you were doing those covers about that story element in particular? Did Boom just come to you and say, okay, can you do the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles holding the Rangers helmets?
They usually send me the story. They send me a lot of stuff, which is really nice of them, just so that I can get inspiration from it and whatnot. Because sometimes we start with a general idea, and then I'm the one that adds in like details from the stories. Sometimes they just send me the story and they're like, come up with something, please. Because like, we're drawing blanks here. And like, okay, that sounds cool too. And sometimes it's just like literally a collaboration where they're like, send a story and it's like, hey, do you want to jam? Literally, that's like, Alex Gaylor and Daphne would do that. It's like, hey, like, can I get you on the phone and we can jam a couple of ideas? And it's like, yeah, sure. And then we'd end up having like a super long conversation on the phone. So that has happened very, very often. So for those, they sent me, yeah, they did send me the story. It wasn't complete, but it was one of those situations where it's like, oh, I know where this is going, and this is going to be cool. That's the information that I got. I was like, okay, I can see where this is going. And I'm pretty sure that in the future, I know exactly the next set of helmets I'm going to be painting.
I mean, when Power Rangers, when Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Power Rangers 2 came out, finally got to do it. What was that like to incorporate those costume designs and those helmet covers?
That was really freaking cool. It was very challenging. That one was very challenging because the designs on the comic, they look amazing in like flat color because of the way that the design works. Turning it into sort of a 3D object was actually very challenging. It was quite difficult because like then you have to make sure that it's like, okay, this edge lines up with this edge, this goes over here, the lights should be shining this way. So especially the yellow helmet gave me the hardest time. Honestly, yellow is notoriously for giving me the hardest time. It doesn't matter which helmet it is, doesn't matter which ranger it is, if it's yellow, I know it's like, oh god, here we go, this is gonna be really tough. I don't know why. I really just don't know why yellow, like yellow helmets give me the hardest time. Now, I'll say this. I just finished something that has to do with yellow that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, that for once did not give me a hard time. I was like, whoa, this came out easy. What happened here?
Maybe you've overcome this challenge. Maybe it's only taken, what, 6-7 years? But you've done it. You've done it.
I'm not gonna say that because I'm going to jinx it. I just know it's gonna get jinxed, and it's like, okay, the next yellow helmet cover is gonna be like a nightmare. Yellow has always been difficult to work with. It's because of contrast issues, because it's a very light color. Red is always the easiest one. It prints beautifully. Green and blue, easy to work with, but difficult to print. And I give them to Boom because they try really hard to get that. Because the problem with green and red is that on television, they look wonderful. But that quality of green and red on print is very difficult to replicate. So it's very difficult to get blue, like screen blue, and translate it to print blue. Very difficult. And it's a weird combination because every time that I do a cover, I got to do it in CMYK. And when I do it in CMYK, it's a weird thing where like the blue helmet, it looks like blue, but the lights are cyan, and the shadows are purple, and when you combine them and print them on CMYK, that looks like this. So when I send the final cover, or when I send the final piece of a blue, I have to send an RGB so that they can get that one approved. And then I send them the CMYK, because if I send it to somebody, if they send it to the licensor, and the licensor is like, oh, that's not the actual blue. It's like, well, that's the CMYK blue, and it's going to print blue, but like it's going to look like the RGB blue, but in the screen, it's not going to look like blue, but in print, it will. Is this confusing enough? It isn't, right? Okay, can you approve this, please? So, yeah, the poor licensors are like, what? Like, listen, it's just a weird printing process. We're sorry. And the same situation happens with green. With green, the lights have to be very cold, like leaning towards cyan, and then the shadows have to be very warm, leaning towards like lime green and gold. And then when it prints out the green. But the CMYK file looks like trash. It does not look as good as the RGB file.
I did a module on color at uni, and I didn't realize, because I'll be completely honest, I haven't used what I learned in that module in my life yet, so I've forgotten 90% of it. But it's sort of crazy how much thinking you have to put into something, from you doing it on your tablet or computer and then trying to work out what it would be like physically in your hand.
That's a lot of effort. Yeah, it's difficult. And then this doesn't happen often. There have been a few print days where like I have received an email like, hey, this is printing weird. And so I know it hasn't happened in a long time, because we got it down. We understand what we need to do now. But there have been a couple of times where I received an email like last minute. It's like, hey, this is printing really wonky. Can we like do some like troubleshooting? And it's like, yeah. So I'll open the file over here, and then they do it like, I do some changes. Then they do a test. Then I get an email back. So like these things have happened like numerous times. And this is all like because the licensors as well as like us, we want to make sure that we get this stuff right. People are gonna know if we don't get it right.
Oh yeah, and you will know through Twitter as well.
Yeah,
within a femtosecond.
Yeah, thank God I'm not in Twitter. Yeah, but yeah, that stuff has happened. Yeah,
is there a franchise other than TMNT, because that's a given? You mentioning your background with just drawing Ninja Turtles all the time. Is there another franchise that you would love to work on that you haven't had the chance to?
Something that I was a huge fan of when I was a kid, and even as an adult, is any X comic, like X-Men, X-Factor. I'm a huge fan of X-Factor. I've never worked with Marvel, and it's like, oh my God. It's not every one of their comics, but the X comics, I love them. Now, I've gotten to work with DC on some of their like stuff, and that was a freaking dream, because they called me for some of my favorites, which was Swamp Thing, Flash, and a couple of like Batman offshoot stuff that are other characters. I don't necessarily care much for Batman, but I love the secondary characters in Batman, like Batgirl, Nightwing, and all of those other characters. I love that stuff. So I've gotten to draw and paint some of them.
It's really funny because X-Men are my favorite superhero team. Flash is my favorite DC hero. Robin, Damian Wayne, is my favorite sidekick as well. So it's funny that you mention all of those.
Oh my God. Honestly, anything of those like Batman secondary characters, like, yeah, I'm totally in for that. I love that stuff. I recently painted one, not sure if it's been published, so I'm not going to mention it just in case the NDA still applies, but I recently painted one, and it was actually with Alex Kaler, because he's in DC now. So he called me from DC to have me do a couple covers for him.
Is that how you started working for DC, was through Alex?
No, with DC, it was an entirely different person, and I started working with them through, what's the name of this? Sandman.
Okay.
Because I did like four or five covers for Sandman. And those were really, really fun. It was really cool to like work with them. And then kind of once you're sort of in the roster, like you're likely going to get called again. And eventually, Alex, Chris Rosa, who worked with me on Next Testament, called me to do some Swamp Thing and Superman crossover stuff. And like, that was really fun to paint. Just so much fun because like, I love painting vegetation in general. And like, I got to paint a superhero, which I love, a superhero that I actually love. And then the vegetation also, it's like, oh, it was such a cool experience. I love working with them too. Chris Rosa and Alex Gill are very easy to work with. They're really awesome people. Like the cool thing is when you're working with a client that is just as big a nerd as you are, it's just incredibly satisfying. This is why I love to work with Daphna as well. Daphna is like, she and I will just geek out about stuff. Like we've met in conventions and like hung out together. And like, he's like, we'll geek out about anything. Cause like, we're just, the both of us are just huge nerds and we're damn proud about it.
I'd love to see your version of the Speed Force, because with every artist, it's always slightly different or drastically different depending on who's drawing it. I'd love to see your version of it. I'd love to see that. And just like what you would dictate as the Speed Force.
Yeah.
I'd love that. That would be amazing.
Once that stuff is out of NDA, I'm down. The NDAs, my friend, the NDAs.
Yeah. Such a killer, right? Moving back on to Power Rangers, is there a team, because you work primarily with Mighty Morphin, is there another team with Power Rangers that you would love to do either helmet covers or Morphin covers or, you know, something with that you haven't had the chance to yet?
So, a couple, yeah. I do have a couple that I really like. In Space, honestly, Andros and Corone, that whole storyline was so cool and I loved it. And I loved Andros. Freaking awesome Red Ranger. Like that whole situation of like being alone for such a long time and then having to learn how to like work with a team again. Like what a freaking cool like story. It was really fun. So I would love to do In Space. I love Ninja Storm as well. I love the costumes of Ninja Storm. And I love the lineup because it was a kind of like an unusual lineup of like, it's five Rangers, but it's two separate teams and they have their conflicts and stuff like that constantly. So I really like that one. Lost Galaxy was really fun too. And SPD was really freaking cool too. Now, I'm not going to say too much because again, NDA, but I'm getting to work on some stuff that I wanted to work with the helmets that's going to be coming out soon because I'm getting to do some things that I wanted to do for a while, and that's kind of cool. But there, I'm getting to illustrate and to do some covers with some characters that have already been revealed, but they still haven't gotten helmet covers and stuff like that, without saying too much.
Amazing.
God, well, if Daphna hears it, you know, I might get in trouble. I'm pretty sure that if Daphna hears it, it's like, look at you creating hype. I'm like, damn right. I'm a nerd.
I mean, you're not telling us what it is. So, I mean, you know, it's fine. But we, we'll look forward to it because, your covers are, I would say, arguably the most iconic thing about the books. Like when, when you think of the books, you think of the helmet covers.
That means a lot because honestly, like, have you seen the other artists?
I know.
Do you have any idea how intimidating it is?
I know. Like Dan Mora is my favorite artist, but like, your covers, I think, are just the first thing that people think of. Like, and then, they bring so much joy because, it's what, like you said, it's what people remember growing up. And when you mentioned the Tommy White Ranger scene of him removing his helmet, like, I didn't put those two together, but they marry up perfectly. Like,
By the way, now that you mentioned Dan Mora, not sure if this is the right time to mention this, But we're going to be doing like a CGC book signing thing on at the end of August down in like the CGC headquarters in Florida. And it's going to be done more on myself. So we're going to be doing that together, which is really cool. And it's going to be like around the end of August. Once I got the dates and stuff like that, I'll make sure to post them on my Instagrams and all my socials.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, that was going to be my next question is, you know, what have you got coming up and where can people find you?
Oh, I mean, of course, my socials, which I wish they were consistent. They're not. I'm Montes Goni on Instagram. But then because somebody squatted on my name on Goni Montes at Instagram, and then Instagram did not release it. And I'm like, oh, man, now I don't get my own. This is kind of annoying. So almost everywhere is Goni Montes because it's a rare name. But on Instagram, it's at Montes Goni. So that's kind of like where I can be found. I've been doing a lot of work with, I've done some work with DC. I'm doing a couple of book covers as well that will be coming out. I'm like essentially kind of tied behind a bunch of NDAs. That's the problem. Like, I wish I could mention a couple more stuff, but it is tricky because, like, you know, because of the NDAs, and I don't want to get in trouble. These companies are my bread and butter.
No, of course.
The one thing I can say is that, yeah, Demo and I will be down in the Florida CGC. This year I'm going to be in a convention over here in Atlanta in October. I will also be bringing that up in the socials. It's the first convention I've done in a really, really long time. I had just a lot of life stuff happened all at once, and I haven't been able to go to a convention in like 5 or 6 years. So I'm now getting back to doing this kind of stuff and going to the conventions and all that stuff. So I will be doing conventions again next year. Hopefully I can do some like book signings and stuff like that. I do have, here's the issue. So I do have the, what's it called? A bunch of merchandise, to be honest. Like, I have a lot of covers. But unfortunately I work alone. I don't have assistants anymore, because of COVID and all that stuff. So I haven't had an assistant in a very long time. Also, like, the assistants that I used to have, like, they've grown and become huge illustrators themselves. So it's not like they're going to stop what they do.
Oh, I hate it when that happens. Oh,
I don't. I'm so fucking proud of them. They kick ass. They're so good.
I'm joking.
Yeah. Some of them are like intimidating, to be honest. intimidatingly good. But yeah, the assistants that I've had are no longer around with me. So ultimately, like, the only way that I can actually like distribute merchandise is when I go to the convention. And I need to go to the conventions because I have a lot of merchandise that I need to distribute. So that's a thing. Also, my friend Parker over here mentioned that I told me that I have not mentioned that I do have the helmet collection at Instagram, which is, what did I call it? Official Goni Montes helmet or official Goni? Official Goni Power Rangers.
Yes. Which is how we connected. So yeah, it's still like very, very early on. You post 3 helmets at a time, right? Or you have been last couple of days.
I've been posting a couple of collections like little by little. So not to drown everyone's Instagram with like, look at all these covers. And then not only does it drown everybody else's Instagram and probably pisses them off, but also like, then what else do I have to post in there after a while? Because I do have a bunch of covers that are coming out, but they're still like, they haven't been published. So Boom Studios gets first rights to publish. So I have to hold off on a few of them. I know that once I start posting the Ninja Turtles, ones, those have been published, I can talk about them. This Instagram is going to be getting a lot of posts a day because it's essentially like 7 covers per turtle plus 7 covers for Shredder. So it's going to be a lot.
Yeah. Wow. That's going to
be. We were painting those for months.
Damn. Yeah. I didn't even think of that. That's going to be interesting to see how you plan that attack.
I can talk about it. I've already got it planned. Essentially, 1 week is going to be like, it's turtle week, guys. So, and every day I'm just going to post like each turtle with the helmet over and over again until like they're done. I know that the Shredder comic is like the one that's like the rarest. I do have some, but it's like I said, it's kind of hard to distribute. I can't go around mailing stuff because I don't work just for comics. I unfortunately also do like other projects and stuff like that, and I can't afford to set up my own shop where I'm like also mailing stuff. It's really difficult, but no, I can do conventions. That part I can do.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting few months. All of your links, I'll compile them in the description. But yeah, thank you for coming on and just basically pouring your heart out. Like I wasn't expecting this sort of response. Like it's been amazing hearing your story and your thought processes with the covers we're doing now, and also the other ventures that you've taken as well, and your upbringing as well with your mum. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And this was really cool. Like I said, I work alone all the time, so it's nice to get to have a conversation with somebody about and nerd out about stuff that we like. That's really cool.
Thank you
so much for the chance.
It's been an absolute treat. You can find me, and I haven't said this for a very long time, so I'm probably going to mess it up. You can find me at Lightning Collection on Instagram, at PRL Collective on Twitter, at Lightning Collection on the Threads, and I think that's it. I could be wrong. But yeah, I mainly use Threads rather than Twitter because I have a bit more control in terms of like what I see. Also the word count or character count is also higher as well, which is great for if I want to potentially rant about something, which I don't do very often. I've only done one rant, but I've also been positive about it, which is great. So everything on Threads is also Power Rangers related. So, you know, there's no world news or anything. So awesome. It's all pretty lighthearted. Thank you again for coming on. Like I said, been an absolute treat. Yeah, thank you for listening, guys, and hopefully speak again soon. Bye. Also, you can say bye as well. I always forget to say that for other people.
Bye. All right. Okay. Bye, guys.
You've just been listening to the Lightning Collective podcast. Have a great day.